Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Pensburg Podcast, the second episode of the 2021 regular season. I am your host, Garrett Bahana. Joined alongside me is Frank Miola. Frank, if you didn't join us last week, Frank is still, I guess you could still consider him the new guy around these parts. But Frank, how are you doing? I'm excited to talk some hockey with you.
I'm doing well. Yes, very excited to talk some hockey. We have a lot to get into today. An interesting week for the Penguins, to say the least. An interesting week, and I'm excited to get going with you.
Yeah, we'll dive right into it here, Frank. And the Penguins, it's always better to play, or it's always better to record a podcast once the season really gets going. The Penguins have played a couple of more games since we put out last week's episode. The Penguins have played games against the Philadelphia Flyers and a two-game series against the Washington Capitals. And we'll briefly go through these games and highlight some of the bigger moments from these games. We'll start with the second game the Penguins played against the Philadelphia Flyers. And Frank, it was another loss for the Penguins this time around. And it was a loss that would bring the Penguins down to an 0-2 record. The Penguins really didn't look all of that hot here. Travis Konecny, from what I can recall, recorded a hat trick in this game. Yes, he recorded a hat trick as part of the five goals that the Flyers scored on this night. The Penguins, Frank, I think they looked flat in this game. Flat, sloppy. They would rebound, as we'll get to it a little later on in this recap segment. But the Penguins really didn't look that too inspired. They still had questions in net as it related to Tristan Jarry's play, and I'm sure we'll touch on that in a little bit. But Frank, do you have any thoughts on what you saw from the Penguins' second game of the season, in which they lost 5-2 to the Philadelphia Flyers?
Yeah, you mentioned that they came out and they looked flat. And starting early on this season, there's a lot more question marks with this team than I think we originally anticipated coming into the season. And we touched on it last episode, and it's carried over into this one. And it goes back to the defense and the goaltending situation. And I'm going to have to eat crow on this one, because I had faith, and I mentioned it on the last episode, in Tristan Jarry. I thought, you know, after one game, we really didn't see too much out of him. But to give up three goals on six shots in your second game of the year, and to only play 11 and a half minutes in this game against the Flyers, it's not good. We have not seen the Tristan Jarry of last year, and it's not good. It does not bode well for the Penguins. Casey DeSmith has played well in his backup duties, I guess, when called upon, but is he the solution? The solution was supposed to be Jarry. This is the whole reason we traded Matt Murray away. So there's a lot of question marks with this team right now. And what we saw against the Flyers was what we saw in the first game, just flat. Special teams was pretty putrid, if you ask me. Just no fight, just no playing behind as usual. And that's going to be the theme of this year, it seems like. And we'll talk more about the Capitals games coming up here shortly. But yeah, just playing behind, playing from behind, and then just no defense and no goaltending, if you ask me. So a lot of question marks that need answered, and we'll dive into a little more of that.
Yeah, Frank, we talked about this last week in our first episode of the season, and I was very quick to point out, I said, you know, it's easy to draw conclusions from the first batch of games that all of these teams, not just the Penguins, but all of the teams around the league that they haven't had a traditional training camp, a traditional preseason. So, you know, I don't think it's fair to draw all of these types of conclusions about a team when they've only played less than as many games as you can count on one hand, you know. But to your point, Frank, looking at Tristan Jarry's stats right here through the season so far, he's played two games, he's started two games, he has an 0-2 record, a 761 goals against average, and a 727 save percentage. Obviously, those are just absolutely dreadful numbers, and they're inflated numbers because, you know, if a goaltender is going to play over the course of an entire season, you know, obviously you expect those numbers to go down. Obviously, no one's going to play with a 727 save percentage or a 761 goals against average over the course of an entire season. It was a little bit concerning to watch Tristan Jarry, like you said, kind of not be the man that we were anticipating him to be coming into the season. And like you said, too, Casey DeSmith has played admirably in replacing Tristan Jarry. But at some point, Frank, I think you have to, and I think Mike Sullivan will, go back to Tristan Jarry. You know, you have to expect him to shake off this rust, you know. There's only so many games in this season, 56 games. So I can see why Sullivan might be hesitant, because a lot of these points are going to matter early on in the season. You know, you have to get points wherever you can, especially in a condensed schedule. But boy, Frank, I don't know when the next time we're going to see Tristan Jarry. We may see him later on tonight. By the time this episode goes out, we may see him later on tonight play the New York Rangers. But Frank, yeah, to your point, Tristan Jarry has not delivered some promising returns early on in this regular season. Moving on, Frank, we'll talk about the two games that the Pittsburgh Penguins played against the Washington Capitals. As you kind of alluded to, Casey DeSmith has played pretty well in Jarry's absence. He was the starter here for the first game the Penguins played against the Capitals. And Frank will come right out and say it. The Penguins do get their first win of the season against the Washington Capitals here, a shootout win that we'll touch on. But Frank, I think looking at this game, this was a back and forth, one team scores, another team scores, one team scores, another team scores. Eventually, these two teams are tied at three. They go into an overtime. 3-on-3 overtime is a lot of fun, especially with the talent that these two teams have. But overtime was not going to settle this game. It was going to take a shootout. And I believe Jake Guentzel was the only person out of both teams to score in the shootout, and Jake Guentzel would give the Penguins that additional point and their first win on the season against the Capitals. So, Frank, looking back at this game, the first game they played against the Capitals, is there anything that you can recall that stood out that you thought, oh, wow, that's a pretty good development for the Penguins as they progress on in the season?
I just like that third line again, Garrett, that third line of Tanev, Jankowski, and remind me of the third player. Remind me, Garrett.
McCann, Jankowski.
McCann, that's yeah. Who it is. I was drawing a blank there. But just the third line again, just coming out and just outplaying every other line, honestly. Maybe except for the Crosby line, of course. But this line just fights. And Tanev, again, he's been a light that we didn't expect to see. I know last year when they signed him, you and I kind of talked about it. Wow, they gave this guy a 6-year deal. Was it really worth it for that kind of money? We really hadn't seen that out of him. And then last year he came in, did his job well, and this year he's carried it over, and he's got two very good players alongside of him on that line. Another guy I liked what I saw from was Casey DeSmith. Yeah, he gave up, what was it, 3 goals, but he's the backup. He did an admirable job coming in and trying to stop the bleeding, as the Penguins really, really needed this win against Washington. Really kept them in this game. As you said, they went back and forth. Typical Capitals Penguins type of game, go back and forth. But DeSmith really gave the Penguins a chance to win this game. Really kept them in it. And then, as you mentioned in the shootout, Jake Guentzel stepped up and got the game winning goal. But just that third line of the Penguins and Casey DeSmith just, you know, keeping us in this game and badly get it, helping us to attain this win.
Yeah, Frank, I think it's obviously a positive development that the bottom six, and more specifically the third line, are chipping in offensively, and you're starting to see them become a lot more noticeable, perhaps more noticeable than I was originally going to give them credit for. We kind of knew the players that McCann and Tanev were. I think McCann is a versatile forward. Brandon Tanev, we know he's really a speedster. I mean, his nickname is Turbo, for crying out loud. But on the other side of that sword, you know, hopefully, and we'll get into this when we begin to recap the second game against the Capitals in a couple of seconds here. Hopefully, the bottom six will be complementary to the superstars, that being Crosby and Malkin. Hopefully, well, and I don't want to specifically target Sidney Crosby because I think he's been superb to start this regular season. More so, Malkin has really been a bit of a mystery so far, and we'll specifically touch on him in this other game against the Capitals, his contributions to that game. But I agree, Frank. I think the bottom six is really starting to form an identity with the players who are involved in those lines. But moving to the second game against the Washington Capitals, it was the Penguins' second win of the season. Always nice to get two wins against a divisional opponent like the Capitals. Another crazy, wild comeback win for the Penguins. They win 5-4 in overtime. And this was the season debut of Kasperi Kapanen. Frank, I'll just come out and say it. I thought Kasperi Kapanen had a superb Penguins debut. I thought he was all over the ice and used his speed to create a couple of plays that were very noticeable. I think this game has also been talked about because of the crazy 3-on-5 shorthanded goal that Teddy Bluger scored as a result of Casey DeSmith's crazy pass. Casey DeSmith basically broke Teddy Bluger free in the neutral zone, and Bluger tucked that one away to score a crazy goal. It was that goal would make the score 4-3 at that point. The Capitals were leading, I believe they were leading 4-2, excuse me. Bluger's goal would make it 4-3 for the Capitals. The Penguins would tie the game. While they were down 4-3 in the second period, they would tie the game from an Evgeny Malkin power play goal. Finally, Evgeny Malkin gets off the schneid here, registers his first goal of the season. Frank, I don't know if you saw Evgeny Malkin's goal on the power play. It was an absolute laser beam. Hopefully, this is what Evgeny Malkin needs to finally kick him into gear and become the player that we've all been accustomed to. But to finish off this recap on my end, the Penguins go into overtime, tied at 4 with the Capitals. Sidney Crosby gets a beautiful overtime winner. The Penguins win 5-4, get their second win of the season. And, Frank, that's about all I have to say on the recap side of this game. What were some of your thoughts that you had coming out of the Penguins' second win of the season?
I thought they started out very slow in this game. They looked very sluggish. Just again, no fight to start the game. It looked like they just showed up late to the party. You had opportunities that the Washington Capitals had. They had at one point, I believe, in the second period, it was a 3-on-0 chance. Like, how on earth do you give up a 3-on-0 chance? Like, where was the team? What went wrong? And again, I don't want to say it goes back to like coaching, or it just goes back to being aware and being like not sluggish, basically. I hate to use that word, but just they're not playing as a team right now. And you can see the chemistry is just not there for some of the lines. And I believe we're going to touch on Malkin here in a second. And I know he scored a power play goal in this game. And it, as you mentioned, it was a rocket. It was typical Geno style one-timer and puts it right by the goaltender. And that's what we want to see from him. But he has just come out slow to start this year and this to start this game and give up opportunities that should have never even happened. So, again, this team is going to face a lot of adversity this year, and it's just how they respond to it and how they move on.
Yeah, and Frank, they're going to move on to a two-game series with the New York Rangers that begins later tonight. And we'll dive into what the New York Rangers are looking like. I think it's no secret, if you're a New York Rangers fan, that they're still in the middle of a rebuild that, you know, to their credit, I think the Rangers, I don't think anyone pegged them to do anything crazy this year, especially with the teams that are in this division. I had mentioned 1,000 times before, even before we had started podcasting, I think this is a very top-heavy division with the Capitals, Bruins, Penguins, Flyers, and Islanders. So I really don't think there's a way for the Rangers to get into the playoffs this season. But nevertheless, I still think this is a team that has a lot of young talent, namely in the young players that they hope become cornerstones of their franchise, and Kaapo Kakko, the number one overall pick in 2020, Alexis Lafreniere. As of right now, Pavel Buchnevich leads the Rangers. He's tied with Artemi Panarin with 4 points for the team lead in points. Those look to be the early providers of offense for the New York Rangers. You would expect a guy like Artemi Panarin to obviously be up there. Alexis Lafreniere has played in 3 games so far, hasn't registered his first NHL point. You have to imagine a young man with his skill set, points are certainly going to come. But Frank, looking ahead, we'll touch on this two-game series rather briefly, because there are other more pressing Penguins issues that I want to talk about. But, I think the Rangers are a team that's obviously still in rebuild mode. They might be able to sneak out a gutsy win here or there. But like I said, looking at the way that this division is assembled, looking at the talent that other teams in this division have, I don't think the Rangers are going to be much of a threat to any of the big dogs in this division. But I still believe they do have some talent coming through their system. And in a couple of years' time, you know, they may return to Metropolitan Division prominence. But Frank, do you have any thoughts you want to share as the Penguins begin to take on the Blue Shirts in the New York Rangers?
I think this is a good opportunity for Mike Sullivan to start Tristan Jarry and to see, you know, where he's at. I mean, we've seen where he's at to start the year against the likes of the Flyers and the Capitals. Now you put him against the team, rebuilding team in the New York Rangers. Can he, you know, gain some of his confidence back in hopefully getting a win against a team that is in full rebuild mode? Because clearly Jarry has lost, if not all of his confidence, most of it. So, again, we were talking about it earlier. Does Mike Sullivan, when does he go back to Jarry? I think this is the perfect opportunity for him to start him, if not one of the games against the Rangers, start him in both. You know, see how he does. And I would say this would be a good assessment for Mike Sullivan to see from here on out if Jarry can't stop a team like a rebuilding Rangers. Not to talk down about the Rangers, but clearly they're in a rebuild. Clearly they're not the team that they were in the past. And as you mentioned, they most likely won't make the playoffs. So Mike Sullivan, a good assessment right now would be for him to put in Jarry and to see where he's at. And hopefully Jarry can, like I said, pick up a win, gain some confidence back, and hopefully move on, you know, to the likes of the Bruins and other powerhouses in this team. Because right now the Penguins, they need points, and they need points bad.
Yeah, I think putting Jarry back in net for a team like the Rangers, who, like we've both said now, really aren't going anywhere, I think that might be the perfect opportunity for Jarry to, you know, maybe see if he's all there mentally, if he's, you know, completely focused on that end. So it'll be interesting to see what lineup decisions Mike Sullivan goes with in net. But Frank, we do know that Mike Sullivan is going to have to change the lineup around, especially on defense. This has become a large talking point early on in the season with the Penguins. All of a sudden, in the second game the Penguins played against the Washington Capitals, for the entirety of that third period, I believe, and the rest of the game, because they went into overtime, they were playing with only four healthy defensemen. So they were basically down to two defense pairings, Juuso Rikkola and... who was the other one? Juuso Rikkola and Marcus Pettersson both left the game due to injury. And in Marcus Pettersson's case, he took a very scary hit from Capitals forward TJ Oshie. And Frank, we have since learned from Mike Sullivan that Pettersson will be out, quote, week to week, and Rikkola is longer term. So, Frank, when you look at these labels that Sullivan has provided with Pettersson and Rikkola, these really don't sound like very encouraging injuries that, you know, maybe Pettersson picked up a nick and, you know, maybe he'd be good to go against the Rangers, and the same for Rikkola. Both of these injuries, while we don't know concrete details, with Mike Sullivan giving us this time frame here of Pettersson being week to week and Rikkola longer term, it's not very encouraging news for a defense that we've already talked about and has already been really exposed as a rather weak unit early on so far. So this is what the Penguins were working with on January 21st while they were in practice. These are their defensive pairs specifically. They had Dumoulin and Letang on that top pair, which is what you'd expect. John Marino and Cody Ceci were on the second defensive pair. And Pierre-Olivier Joseph, the big return, the big player in the Phil Kessel trade to the Arizona Coyotes, and Kevin Churchman were rounded out the defensive unit. And it should be noted that Chad Ruweedel was not at practice. I believe it was because he had, celebrated the birth of a child with his wife. I believe that's why he was excused from practice. So I would anticipate Chad Ruweedel to be somewhere in that defensive unit, maybe replacing a guy like Kevin Churchman, who doesn't have a ton of really great NHL experience. But Frank, looking at these defensive pairs, the Penguins are already going to be put to the test with how far their defense can take them, with injuries to Rikkola, Marcus Pettersson, and Mike Matheson too, who will be out longer term. So Frank, looking at these defensive pairs, you know, like we've said, this team is going to be put to the test. This defense is going to be put to the test. What do you make of these makeshift Penguins defensive pairs in practice, and what do you make of the Penguins defense moving forward?
Not good. It's a scary thought to think about more than half of your starting defense defenseman is, if not on IR, could most certainly be headed there. As you mentioned, week to week for, I believe you said, Pettersson, and then...
Yes.
Longer term for Rikkola. So again, those are two of your pretty solid defensemen, especially with Pettersson being out. That it's not looking good for the Penguins, and for a team that has already not looked good on defense to start the year, with those guys in the lineup, now you have to wonder, okay, is Jim Rutherford, you know, he's got an itchy trade finger, so is he working the phones right now? The problem he has, we're up against the salary cap. So it's not like he can easily call up a team and say, hey, I need a defenseman. No, we're going to have to give up something. We're going to have to make moves ourselves to, you know, fit in a guy that I'm not sure if he's looking at top defenseman or just a guy to fill in. Who knows what Jim Rutherford's looking at. I'm sure he's looking at defense, of course. But again, it's not looking good right now for the Penguins on defense, especially when you have a goaltender as well who's, like I mentioned, lacking in confidence. So he needs all the help he can get, and right now it's makeshift. So we just have to hope that help is on the way, and the help that is certainly here right now can surprise many and fill in admirably for the guys that are out. And it's going to be a tough stretch here for a little bit. But we just have to hope that things, like I mentioned in the first episode of this podcast, the offense is going to have to do a lot of scoring to help get back in these games. So if our star power on offense can help limit the damage a little bit, we'll be okay. But that's a lot to ask for guys that, especially for Geno, for a guy like Geno who is not all there right now. That's a lot to ask. So, again, this team, I feel like a broken record saying it, but this team is in shambles right now, and it's not just on defense, but it is on offense, and it is in goaltending as well.
Yeah, it's at least the immediate the immediate look of these defense pairings don't look promising. It might be a bumpy road ahead for the Penguins. And, you know, like you had said, Frank, you hope that the offense is able to give them some extra support. And they were already, I think the offense was already being counted on, especially that top six. They were already being counted on to produce at a high level. Now, even more so, I think they're going to have to do that. You know, you're not going to get abnormalities from that first line of Dumoulin and Letang, even though, you know, both of those defensemen have looked a little on and off. They've looked a little wishy-washy early on. John Marino, I think, is still settling. He's settling in quite nicely in his sophomore season. Cody Ceci is a depth defenseman. That's what he was signed for. That it's reflective in his contract. It'll be interesting if Pierre-Olivier Joseph makes his NHL debut to see if the young defenseman to see what the kind of player he is at the NHL level, finally getting his feet wet, maybe if he's called upon. So the Penguins, like you said, Frank, they will have their work cut out for them on that blue line, as it has already been depleted. The Penguins have only played 4 games in this season. It seems like the Penguins, they're always going through some sort of injury bug, and it looks like early on this season that is still proving to be the case. But, Frank, if you have nothing else left to add, we can move into our mailbag segment. And if you've just found the Pensburg podcast as the NHL season gets underway and you like what you're listening to, you can contribute to the Pensburg podcast by asking us a question on Twitter. Every week, we will send out a mailbag tweet from our Pensburg podcast account at Pensburg Pod on Twitter, asking for your participation in this segment. And we like to get all sorts of crazy and fun questions. We have 4 questions in this week's mailbag, and I think a lot of them are very fun, very interesting questions. So, Frank, you'll get first crack at answering this week's mailbag. Stephen Whitehouse kicks off the mailbag this week. He wants to know your thoughts on Jack Roslovic and the trade rumors that have surrounded the 23-year-old Winnipeg forward who remains unsigned. He wants to know, do we really need another depth forward? Would he really improve the right wing, assuming that's where he slots in the lineup?
Do we need him? No, I feel like he's an unnecessary piece right now, especially with the defense and how in shambles they are and will continue to be here for the long haul. Would he be nice to have? Of course, yeah. Of course, always build up the depth. Where would he fit? The question is he a top six right now? In my mind, he's not top six yet. So do we need him? No. And I don't think we should go out of our way to acquire a guy that is currently unhappy in the situation he's in. I believe he's looking for a new contract from Winnipeg. We don't really need that drama on a team that is already filled with a lot of question marks right now. And does he slot in? I don't think he's fit for the third line with how good we are right now, how good our third line is. Does he go as low as the fourth line if we were to get him? I mean, that's a question Mike Sullivan would have to answer again if Jim Rutherford pulls a trade off like this. I don't see him as a top six on either the Crosby or Malkin line. I just think he's an unnecessary piece right now. I think we should be focused more on defense and shoring up the defense and just getting a few more guys in here to help us along the way while we have the injuries that we do have. And I was reading something earlier about the Roslovic. Am I saying it right?
Roslovic.
Yep. Winnipeg's looking for a left-handed defenseman. Currently, 3 of our guys, if memory serves me correct, is injured that are left-handed defensemen, and Marcus Pedersen and Ricola and Mike Matheson. So I mean, would any of those guys interest Winnipeg anyway? Would have interested Winnipeg, maybe Marcus Pettersson, but to me, that's overpaying. I just think it's an unnecessary piece, and I think it's something the Penguins should look away from right now.
I think the Roslovic trade rumors would have been, I think they would have caught more fire before the injuries to Ricola and Pettersson, but now with the gaping hole really on the back end, I think acquiring Roslovic does nothing for the team. So I think this is a rumor. I mean, you never know with Jim Rutherford. Let's put that out there. You never know, because I've always called him a gunslinging general manager. So he could go out and acquire Roslovic. I don't know what he'd give up, because I see Roslovic as a depth player. I really don't see a fit currently, to agree with you, Frank. And if Rutherford is going to get on the phone and make a trade, if you're looking for more immediate help, I think it would definitely come on the defense at this point.
Just to add to that, I don't have the Jets lineup or roster in front of me, but does Rutherford, as you mentioned, he's the gunslinging general manager. Does Rutherford maybe package Roslovic with a Winnipeg defenseman? Again, I don't have the roster in front of me, so I'm not going to speculate on that or anything, and I'm not sure if Winnipeg has anything that would interest Jim Rutherford on the defensive side. So just a wild thought of, could they do a package deal, and what would we have to give up to do it? But again, I just feel he's unnecessary and not a good fit right now. But moving on, second question here. Frytime asks, Garrett, which league goalies would be the best player outside of the net?
Okay, so this is a really interesting question. And I had this conversation with my dad not too long ago. We were talking about some way or another, Marc-Andre Fleury came into conversation, and we were talking, I know what we were talking about. We were talking about how the NHL could increase scoring, and that conversation led to me suggesting to shrink goalie equipment. And the conversation then turned to Marc-Andre Fleury. If you've ever looked at a Marc-Andre Fleury without his, like, big lumbering pads on, the dude is a twig. I mean, he is as skinny gets. He's obviously very athletic, but he is a twig. He does not – you really wouldn't know what he looks like with all those pads on. But holy moly. I know that's irrelevant to what Frytime was asking. What league goalies do you think would be the best player? So he doesn't specify whether it would be defense or forward. I've done some research on this. From what I recall reading, I think Martin Brodeur has scored. I think he scored 3 goals as a goaltender in the NHL, I think. So I'm not sure if that's the most by goaltenders ever scored. And I'm not saying goal scoring by goalie is the be-all, end-all metric if you're looking to see what goaltender can play defense or offense. But reading up on some of these goaltenders and their history with the game and how they grew up and how they became goaltenders, you know, a lot of big-name goaltenders like Brodeur, Roberto Luongo, Henrik Lundqvist, Ryan Miller, a lot of these guys, when they were growing up playing the game, they experimented with all sorts of positions, defense, center, left wing, right wing, what have you, until they eventually, one way or another, found their way between the pipes. So it's hard to say what player would be the best outside of the net. So I'm just going to go, if you're looking for a set answer, I'll just say Martin Brodeur because he scored the most goals. Definitely an interesting question, though. I don't know if there's any other stats that have been recorded, if goaltenders have played out of position. I don't know if that's really ever been recorded, so don't quote me on anything there. But I'll say Martin Brodeur would be the best player outside of the net. All right, Frank, you get question number 3. Commander Kern is back, and he wants to know, what's up with Evgeny Malkin? He's gone from superstar just to taking up space. I know that seems harsh, but it's frustrating that someone so good seems to have become complacent over the years.
What is up with Evgeny Malkin? That is the question, and we just saw him score in the last game against Washington, which is a good sight to see. I was just thinking something earlier. I was reading over this question, and I was thinking, what has happened to Malkin? And it just seems like ever since Phil Kessel came to town, and you heard about them not getting along and them always having, we'll call, disagreements, and, you know, Kessel not getting along with Mike Sullivan, and that it was when it just seemed like around that time is when Gino just, like it says in the question, became complacent. He just kind of, I don't want to say disappeared, because we did win 2 Stanley Cups and he was a big part of that, but there was always the question every offseason of, is he going to get traded? Is he going to, it's like I just said, is it Kessel? Is it Malkin? Who was going to go? I'm not going to say they took a toll on him, but I'm sure trade rumors of that magnitude every offseason since Kessel had come to town just took a toll on him. And, you know, it just seems like he's going through the motions, if you will, and he's got no fight. He's got no desire. Kessel's not there anymore, so there's not really an excuse as to why it's still carrying over. He does get paid a lot of money. I'm not sure if those had contributed to some of the trade rumors this past offseason. Maybe Jim Rutherford looking to clear some salary cap space. Ultimately, he's still on the team, but it's just the complacency, as we just mentioned, of Malkin. It just seemed like around that time when Kessel was brought in, and it just seemed like that's when Malkin had become distant, if you will, and it's carried over into the 2021 season.
I want to butt in here, and I want to provide a disagreement, and I have debated with my dad on this issue 1,000 times over for the last couple of seasons. And it's really, you know, it's amplified because of Malkin's slow start to the season. But I will say that Evgeny Malkin, I believe he led the team last year in scoring, even though it was a shortened season. In 55 games, he registered 74 points last year. So that's obviously well over a point per game. You know, is he the same player that we saw maybe 5-10 years ago? No, I don't think so. I think at 34 years old, I don't think he's able to do the big fancy deeks that, you know, we may have seen in a younger Evgeny Malkin. I think with his size, I don't know if he has the same burst, the same speed, but I do believe Evgeny Malkin is a valuable asset, specifically on the power play. You know, if it gets to a point in his career, however much longer he continues to play, I still believe he can be an effective power play specialist, like what we saw in the Washington game with that one-timer, that bullet, the power play goal that he scored to tie the game at 4. I still absolutely believe that he can be an effective goal scorer if put in the right scenario. But I just wanted to play devil's advocate there with Evgeny Malkin, because I am still in the camp. I'm still a firm believer that Evgeny Malkin is a very valuable commodity. I know a lot of people in this fan base are and have been very fed up with Evgeny Malkin for how he has turned out and how he has played. You know, some calling him sluggish or complacent or lazy, but I am not one of those people. I still think Crosby and Malkin play together. I still firmly believe that they retire together. Chris Letang, you know, we talk about the core, those three players being part of the core. I don't know if Chris Letang will retire as part of the three-man group, but as long as Crosby and Malkin are on this team, I want them playing together and I want them retiring together. I still think even at 34, Malkin has a good bit left in that tank. So it'll be interesting to see if that power play goal gets him off the schneid there. But I just wanted to add that in before we hit this last question here and wrap everything up, Frank. Now you're free to go.
I would, if we had more time, I would make a rebuttal to that. But we will move on. We can discuss that in private. We will move on to this last question, though. And this last question comes from Brian. He asks, who do you think has the best flow on the team? My vote personally would be for Jared McCann.
I think the best flow on the team, well, Chris Letang is the first person that comes to mind. I mean, the dude has, you know, almost indirectly made a second career for himself just based on his hair. I think he could be a head and shoulders athlete, one of those kinds of athletes. You know, Troy Polamalu represented head and shoulders, obviously a Pittsburgh Steelers icon. So I think he has that kind of flow going for him. Brandon Tanev, he made the rounds recently, right before the season started, with his very, very terrifyingly funny promotional photo of him. And it looks like he's seen looking at a ghost in the picture that was taken. I think he has a great flow, a great head of hair too. So my answer, I'll pick two. I'm gonna say Letang and Brandon Tanev, both are tied for the best head of hair on the team. Frank, who do you think has the best head of hair on the team?
Well, since you picked two, I guess I'll pick a second as well. And my second is your second. It's Brandon Tanev. I think that I'm going to call it the pandemic hair, because he didn't have that hair before the pandemic. And now we're amidst the pandemic. And he decided to just let it go. And I think he's, like you mentioned, that terrifyingly hilarious promotional picture that he took before the season started. That's where things just really kicked off in that direction of his flow. And I just was watching a little short clip on Instagram, I think the other day, of he had his helmet off and he was drinking it from the squirt bottle, and just he had his hair and he was shaking it and stuff, and it was just like, it was one of the funny things to see. And you know, hey, when you're playing great, why not have great hair as well? So I think my two is Jared McCann and Brandon Tanev. So those are my two.
I think it's weird. Hair, you know, a hockey player's hair or a flow or whatever you want to call it, I think it's weirdly become an identifying factor. And it's like people online, you know, they go out of their way to kind of like make a list or judge players based on who has the best hairstyle. Really weird, but you know, with the helmets that they wear, it's easy to grow out your hair and create one of those crazy flows. But Frank,
even let me just add something real quick here.
Sure, go ahead.
Even come playoff time, there's always that playoff beard that people grow, and it's like a superstition amongst fans, and it's just hair. Like,
if,
I don't know, just the phenomena of growing out your hair, and it's like people do, you know, the players do it too, of course, and it's just they don't shave it until they either win the Stanley Cup or obviously if they get eliminated. But just come playoff time, always excited to see the playoff beards and how wacky they can get sometimes. Sid always has a wacky one, so it just the thing about hair, I guess, that just makes everything better.
Well, hockey players, I know for a fact, are creatures of habit, and Sidney Crosby is a creature of habit in his own. That the first person that came to mind when I said that was Crosby. But yeah, if I was a hockey player, I've never played a second of ice hockey in my life. But if I was, I don't know if I'd want super long hair. I think, first and foremost, if you know what I look like, I think I look better with short hair to begin with. So I don't think I'd want a super long, like, mullet-looking thing, like the Jaromir Jagr hair that he had back in the day. It looks like, visually, it looks kind of cool if you're rushing down the ice and, you know, your hair is flowing in the wind or whatever. But I don't know. I don't know if I'd ever be able to roll with super long hockey hair like some of these players do, Frank.
Yeah, I could never pull that off. I just, God bless them. And, you know, if it helps them to play great, then so be it. But that, for me, that would just not work out well.
No. Well, Frank, that was one crazy way to end the mailbag and one crazy way to end this episode of the Pensburg podcast. Do you have anything else you wanted to add before we wrap this episode up?
Just go Pens.
Yeah. Short, sweet, to the point. Hopefully this time next week, the Penguins will have more wins than they do losses, and we'll be able to see if they get on some sort of a roll as the season really starts to pick up steam here and players finally start to get back into the groove. But for Frank Miola, I have been Garrett Behanna. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Pensburg Podcast, and we will see you next week.